Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome to this week's Twins Talk Theater. Today we're talking to one of my friends from college, Katie Hamilton, who I guess I've now known for 12 years, 11 years, something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we graduated from CCM. So Katie is the assistant technical director and lighting supervisor at Colorado College, which is in Denver, Colorado, I believe.
Colorado Springs.
And Colorado Springs, somewhere out there. She was telling me before the podcast that she went out there for a 6-month contract because one of her friends was a TD there, and it's now been just over 5 years since she's been out there. She likes it. Before that, she worked at Ensemble Theater in Cincinnati. And before that, and I think even before you came to CCM, you were the technical director at, I think it was Seven Hills School,
yeah,
close to Cincinnati. So that's kind of where I want to get started. Did you go into theater right away when you were younger? You knew exactly that that's what you wanted to do? Or did you kind of found it later in life?
I found it a lot later in life. I didn't do it in high school. I didn't get into theater until my senior year in high school. And it was, of course, acting. And then in college, I kind of stayed away from it because it was a bigger beast in college. And it kind of scared me. But later on in college, I auditioned for a part and got it. And the next,
week,
I blew out my knee and then couldn't do the part. So instead, I decided to supplement my rage and work in the costume shop.
Nice.
I like sat there because I knew how to sew. And I sat there and I stitched and I did laundry for the show. And I caught the bug. But it wasn't something I ever thought I would do in real life, I guess. So I graduated of school and started teaching an after-school program. And from there, went to a full-time teaching job at Seven Hills School and was asked one day to come babysit the technical theater class on a Saturday and showed up, did it for a couple years, loved it. And on a whim, I decided I wanted to do this with my life and happened to know CCM was just up the road and drove up there, literally walked in the building and started talking to people. And that's how I ended up there.
There's two things that I really loved about that. One is you said something that so many people that we've talked to have said, like when you're younger, you don't realize that you can do this as a living. You know, I feel like so many of us, we were the same way. Our parents are like, you could never make a living doing this. And that's kind of what I'm hoping this podcast will reach high school students, college students, and be like, yes, you can. You can do this for a living. Totally pursue it now. Like, don't wait until you're, you know, much older. But this is something you could totally do.
When I was an undergrad and I started thinking about doing theater, I mean, as an actor, not as a technician, but I wanted to do theater. And my parents literally said, if you declare a theater major, we will not pay for college.
Yeah, Arf said you can't declare a theater major.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even an option. Like, you could do it for fun, but that's just not an option.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what my parents said, which is kind of why I didn't get started till later in life, because it has been ingrained in a lot of us that this is fun. This is, you know, unless you are drop dead gorgeous or freaking brilliant, you're never going to make it. And it really sucks that a lot of people kind of get steered away from the profession because of those, I don't want to say stigmas, but because of those ideals.
Right, exactly. And I feel like you lose so many good technicians and so many good actresses because people's parents or society tells them that you can't do it. So I think it's awesome that you eventually found your way back there and, you know, decided that this is what you can do because it's, and you are making a living out of it. So it's really awesome.
And it's so much fun and you're never doing the same thing twice. And I look back now, even at what I did after I graduated from college the first time, and I'm like, it felt very creative and a little bit freeing teaching small children. But at the same time, I look back and I'm like, okay, that was still pretty regimented. And I'm like, what would have happened to me if I had ended up behind a desk?
Oh, like, yeah.
It's just kind of depressing. Say that working behind a desk is totally depressing for those of my people who work behind desks.
But some people like that. Yeah, our brother loves 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, steady raises. He wears a suit. He drives a new car. He knows when he's going to work and when he gets off work and what he does every day at work. Great. Perfectly fine for him.
Yeah.
Not for Cindy and I.
He finds fulfillment somewhere else, though. You know, like I think we kind of find fulfillment from work. You know, we get this huge rush from shows we do. He can't say that about his work. You know, it's fine. He's fine with it. But he doesn't get up excited to go to work or excited for an opening night, you know? So he does other things. He cooks, he works out. They take a lot of weekend trips, you know? So he finds fulfillment other places. But for us, it's just so different. The other thing that I really loved, we talked to, I met up again with Tracy Hoffman, who was at CCM. We actually just did a show together in Philadelphia. And it's funny that her story is a little bit similar to yours, that she did something else and then, you know, she was told that she can never do theater for a living. And then after she retired from the Navy, she literally just like walked into CCM one day and met with Michelle because she was like, well, you know, I live in Cincinnati. I might as well just come do it. So it's just hilarious to me that this like top university, one of the top schools for our field. And you guys just like literally walked in the door and we're like, we kind of want to go here. So why not?
I walked in to the shop actually and talked to Steve Waxler. And I, in true Katie form, had a broken leg at the time.
And I think she might be one of the few people clutchier than I am. So we got along really great. Yeah.
So I walk in with this big walking cast on and sat down with him and was telling him about how I'd been doing tech at the high school for so long. And I came prepared with some pictures. That's the only thing I brought with me, not even a resume. Like I had no clue what I was doing. But after talking, we sat in his office and talked for about an hour. And after talking, he was like, you know, you missed the registration deadline, but you're in luck. You know, I have a slot that I am able to fill if you want it. Wow. And I think I walked out of there and burst into tears because I'd been floundering for a while in a job I didn't really like and knew that the one day a week that I was spending at this high school doing technical theater, I was so happy in those 6 hours a day that I was like, all right, I gotta try because I was just miserable doing everything else.
Yeah. So you started in that fall.
I started that fall.
Man, Twin, what did you spend all that time applying to grad school for?
I know. I should have just walked in. What was I doing?
Well, I also went in as an undergrad. So I actually have 2 undergrad degrees.
Yeah, but were you there for 4 years or did you get to like
3.
Skip some of the, oh good. So you got to skip some of the like prereq stuff.
I came in with 110 credits. But
that's awesome.
My degree I got from my first undergrad was anthropology.
Yeah, and those are similar. So,
yeah, I know. Almost 0 crossover. So I still had to take a lot of the gen ed courses for the major, for the degree.
Right, but not, well, I guess CCM, you don't really have to take too many like outside English credits and stuff. So
no, I did have to take 2 outside English classes. Thank God I didn't have to take any math or science classes. I would have, oh my God. It would have been bad.
It's so funny because so many TDs, I feel, you guys use math on a daily basis and yet, there's so many TDs I know that are just like, I can't do math. And I was like, you do it all the time. You just created a cut list for me. What do you think that is?
It's so second nature that it's not math. Like math is sitting down with like a piece of paper and like a pencil and long division is math.
I haven't done that since I think junior high.
I know. would I go back to all those teachers and be like, I don't balance my checkbook. That's what the internet is for.
I True. Go onto the internet once a week and I make sure, yep. Okay, we're good. Those are all my charges.
Yep. All that time ever... spent.
So true. So then you spent 3 years at CCM. You got a degree in technical direction?
Yes. With did a you... minor in lighting okay. technology.
So you did do some lighting. So then what did you...
not in a practical sense.
You're like, I took a lot of classes.
I took classes and I AME'd on one show and that was it.
Really?
Yeah.
And you still got a degree in it.
Spencer. Yeah. I AME'd for Ben Spencer and yeah. That was really the only like hands-on experience I got other than Light Lab and stuff, but I don't count.
Yeah. So then what did you do after you graduated?
After I graduated, I went straight to ETC. Aaron Clements called me and said, hey, we need an ATD. What do you say? I said, sure. I don't have a job and I'm graduating.
And I already live here, so it's great.
Yeah. Well, no, that was in Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was an ETC.
So right, but I'm saying you already lived in Cincinnati, so you didn't have to move anywhere.
Yeah, sorry.
What is ETC?
Ensemble Theater of Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. ETC to me is a lighting company. So I was like, it's in Cincinnati?
No. I'm like, what? You don't know the difference between ETC and ETC?
Exactly. You said you did lighting, so sure, why not? Do they do, I don't know anything about them because I never left California. Do they do big musicals, smaller shows? What kind of stuff do they do there? Shows,
they do a lot of new works.
Nice.
Yeah. I think they do 6 shows a season. They do 1 musical a year. It's their holiday show because it's more of a family show. So a lot of their stuff is, I don't know, for Cincinnati, avant-garde. it's risque. You have Playhouse in the Park in Cincinnati, which is more for the masses, and then the Aronoff series, which is the touring musicals, and then ETC, which is edgier, but still appeals to a lot of people. And then kind of down the road, you get the No Theater, which is a lot edgier and more
experimental-y kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
I know a number of CCM people who work at ETC now.
Yeah.
Or have, you know, through the years have worked at ETC because.
Well, we started an internship program with CCM while I was at ETC.
Oh, really? I don't know that.
Yeah. So Aaron was the TD and I was the ATD. Nick Kelke came in as an intern for 2 years. And right. then Emily Kruger. And then. Yeah. Oh, I totally forget the next 3 people's names.
And then there are like other people that came with
Christian. I can't remember his last name. And then the 2 others, I don't remember them at all.
But it's a 1-year internship.
Stefan, you remember Stefan because he put his hand into the table saw.
Oh,
yeah, that was good. A fun day.
Yeah, luckily I've never had an injury. That bad.
Ooh, it was not a pretty sight.
So then you're working at ETC and then your friend Paul calls you up and he's the TD in Colorado, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
He it turned and Paul got the job out here because the lighting designer that was working here was friends with Sterling and gave a call one day and was like, look, our TD left. Like he dropped and left. And
really?
we're without someone. And Paul was graduating and had to do, I guess he was graduating mid semester or something. And they're like, I think he needed a credit left. And Sterling was like, go to Colorado and you'll get your credit. So yeah, he came out here and kind of set up shop and he's been running things. And one day, he and I had been friends since undergrad, like since he was 18 and I was 19. So he and I talk a lot, and he knew I was kind of not liking Cincinnati. I liked ETC. I was just kind of ready to be out of Cincinnati. And his wife called me one day and was like, Paul's going to call you. Be surprised. It's like, if you hadn't told me, I would have been surprised.
But she was so excited. She wanted to tell you first.
Yeah. So he called me and he was like, hey, our ATD just left. I need someone. Can't promise anything. It's a 6-month temporary position, but it might turn into more. And I was, of course, terrified.
Right. You like pack up everything and move cross country.
That's yeah. For a 6-month gig and not know what, I had no idea. It could have been over in 6 months and then I'm stuck out here and I don't know anybody or how right. the world works in Colorado. But showed up, I worked my tail off, and when I was hired, they nobody really 100% knew that I had never run a show as an Emmy before.
Well, you have so it on your you have a degree in it, right? So you're
exactly.
good.
Yeah. So I, with the help of a very lovely student who I'm still very close with, he kind of taught me the ropes. His name is Robert Mahaffey. I'm going to name drop because he's amazing. with his help, I learned really fast and it's kind of second nature now. And I have to admit, I kind of love doing lighting.
I love lighting. It's so much fun.
I mean, when focus day comes around, I'm like a little kid. I'm like, I'm going to get a good coffee for today and I'm going to sit and we're going to focus lights. Focus day. Like, I actually look forward to it. I'm like, hang faster so we can focus.
I think tomorrow's focus day up at Allegiant. I'm going to be up there towards the end of it and see what they do.
That's how I feel about getting cues in my book and programming, you know, like everyone else kind of gets stressed. And I was like, 12 hours in a dark theater and I could put cues in my book. This is so awesome. Like, this is like, where you like watch the magic work.
Yeah. This is why we do it.
This is, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
So you were telling me earlier, you're at the college, but you don't actually teach. Your sole focus is like making the productions happen. How is that? Like, I feel like I would totally love being at a college if I didn't have to deal with all of the like political teaching stuff and just like,
yeah, that's one of the things that scares me too. Like, I know how to teach, like, hey, we're standing on stage, this is a screw gun, but to sit down and do a curriculum and all that scares me. So I don't apply to many university jobs or high school jobs because I don't really want to sit in a classroom.
Yeah. There's a fine line because we do teach the practical skills. We have shop staff that are students and almost none of them are theater majors.
Really?
Like, huh. Oh my God. We're getting people across all disciplines because it's a work study job.
Okay.
That makes sense, but almost all the work study when I was at school were mostly theater people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I started work studying in the costume shop a year before I transferred to a theater degree. I was still a math major, but I knew how to work in costumes. And so that's how I started. And then I eventually became a theater major. But yeah, you're right. When I started, I was a math degree. They probably were like, what the hell are you doing in a costume shop? But
yeah.
So
we teach the skills. We teach. It's kind of like teaching someone a new language when you don't have a lot of experience in theater.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There actually is a language associated with it. But it's a new way of thinking about the progression of things. Like, it's not just, okay, here's your job for today. Sit down and do it. It's like, okay, here's our task and we need to get to this endpoint through these tasks. But while these tasks are going on, things are going to go wrong and you're going to have to critically think about what's going on to achieve this final thing.
Yeah.
I think it's the critical thinking.
Yeah, definitely.
Because a lot of things don't teach you critical thinking, like math, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah.
But when you're like, okay, well, I have this piece of wood and that piece of wood and I need to make this object. Now what do I do?
Right. It's not an argument, but it's something I'm hearing a lot in high schools about those practical skills and how it does foster a new way of thinking, of critical thinking for life, and how those skills are not being taught at a younger age. They're like the fact that almost all shop classes do not exist in high school anymore.
It's a real problem
because everyone is so cerebral based and technology based these days that there's not that crossover of you need both kinds of thinking to really achieve a lot. And the practical side of the thinking and the doing is really kind of being lost.
I agree. Not just with shop, but home ec, like sewing is still making you think. Cooking. You can't just, you know, pop it in the microwave. Like, how do you actually cook a meal from scratch? How do you do the measurements? How do you double this recipe? Things like that. And luckily, Cindy and I were taught all that growing up. And we did have a shop class, I think, in seventh grade for a couple months and something like that. But, most people don't.
It was so basic. I think we didn't even have them for a whole semester. I feel it was like 4 weeks in the shop, 4 weeks in this like home ec class, 4 weeks in this like jewelry making class, you know, and that was it. That was all that you had. We learned because our parents taught us. And then in high school, we were lucky enough that we had to build our own sets in high school with the supervision of parents, you know, but that's how we learned was all through high school. So are you getting students that like did it in high school and so they knew they wanted to go in? I mean, even if they don't get a major in it, but like, I can't imagine somebody who knows absolutely nothing about theater walking into a shop saying they want to do a work study there. Or do you get those people?
Oh yeah. We get them all the time. Paul, the TD, teaches one adjunct and it's called the Stagecraft Practicum. And it's more kind of introducing people to the concept of technical theater. They do a tour of our big space on campus, which is the closest thing we have to a traditional theater. And then they get to work with all the tools in the shop. His last class built sawhorses. The class before that, I can't remember. They'll build small flats or they'll build something like that. But these are kids mm-hmm. with, you know, I've never touched a screw gun before.
Right.
And then after that, a lot of those kids come back to us. And
because they like it.
They like it. And they're like, hey, and I know how to use these tools now. Can I possibly come work in your shop? And it's nice to have those kids come back because they've kind of gotten a little bit of an overview already.
Mm-hmm.
But we do every once in a while get someone. We got an email early this year saying, hello, I'm interested in theater. Can I work in your shop? It was kind of like, why don't you come by and talk to us? This isn't an interview online. This is, you got to come in. And we make them, the people who apply for our jobs have to do some, we call them volunteer hours. So we can make sure that personalities match, that it's not kind of a, well, I'm going to do the least amount possible in order to get paid type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We are very fortunate to not have run into that type of student. So we're very fortunate with our workers.
I remember when I first interviewed for work study at the University of Redlands, my TD there, Dan Cork, who was amazing, sat me down, talked to me, you know, asked if I knew tools and this and that. But then he also said, we also clean. We sweep, we vacuum, we empty trash cans, you know, we do all that stuff. And I'm like, well, yeah, how else does the shop get cleaned? He's like, yeah, some people just want to build. And it's like, there's all the organizing and cleaning and maintenance stuff that has to go on too. And I still do that, tell people that when they interview for my job at Palos Verdes, that, yeah, hey, you're, you know, applying for a lighting job, but at the end of the day, we still have to sweep the floor. And if I have mm-hmm. a huge set, we still have to unload the truck. And I know you're a lighting person, but you might be called in to do some other things too. Do you know how to do other things? Because we're not a union house and sometimes I just need bodies.
Yeah. One of the first things I do is teach kids how to sweep.
I've had to teach people. One guy tried to mop and then sweep, and I was like,
"That's not how this works."
It's like, have you ever done this at home?
Mopping and dance floor is one of those skills that has to be taught as well. Like, it kills me what I see.
I
feel we are totally taught that at CCM. Like, there was a way that Wachter wanted you to mop, and like, even now when I watch people mop, I sometimes I correct them. Well, when I'm not at theater, I just like turn around and walk away. Like when I'm at the store, I'm like, okay, you just suck at this, but whatever. Like, there's no point in even trying to teach you how to mop.
You figure eight and you drag it with you. Figure eight.
Yeah, it's really not that difficult.
Yeah.
And don't just flop water everywhere. Like, I don't want the stage wet for 5 hours. It's got to be dry in like 20 minutes. We have actors on stage. But
sweeping is worse when you see someone with like a push broom and they start at one end of the room and then just push straight across.
And you're like, that picked up nothing.
Like, guys, all you did really was make a broom track in the floor. Like,
yeah. I watched one guy start sweeping steps starting at the bottom. I was like, okay, let's try this again.
That twice.
But yeah,
this is why we need shop class in high school.
It's back to that critical thinking. Like, why do I have to explain this to you? Gravity should just be common sense.
But it must be so rewarding because you, for work study, I assume you then have those kids like all year long. It's got to be so rewarding to like get to the end of the year or have them come back the second year and then actually see the progress, or you know, be able to give them a task and be like, build a flat and not have to explain to them what a flat is. I feel like that's got to be just as rewarding as teaching, because you're actually seeing the practical knowledge work as opposed to like them just passing tests.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we, most of our students stay with us for all 4 years.
Oh, that's even more awesome.
Yeah, it's also really, really hard to let them go.
yeah.
Because, like, as a professor, you have a student for, I don't know, in their 4 years, a couple classes. I see some of these kids every day for 4 years.
That's why Dan Cork was my biggest influence, because I did work study with him for 4 years, and I volunteered when I wasn't doing work study, and he taught me AutoCAD, and he taught me Vectorworks, and he was the main connection to theater. He's probably why I continued in theater, and he was never physically my teacher.
Yeah, I have to say Kathy was my teacher for like one semester, and Jack, it's kind of like you, Jack was the TD at my college, and he didn't teach, he was literally just the TD and did all tech stuff, you know, but I was with him every single day. So you know, I'm still friends with his son, and you know, I loved it when his daughter got married because they're about my age, and you know, I'm friends with them. So
Yeah,
that's got to be hard to let him go after 4 years. But then you still keep up with them, right? And then you can see all this wonderful things that they're doing out in the real world.
Yeah. An alumni stopped by today and, like, totally did not recognize him. I keep forgetting they're not grown-ups when they leave here. They keep growing. But, yeah, I'm still friends with a lot of students. And there's a lot of crossover in our department with film as well, and I'm keeping up with a lot of those kids as well, and a lot of them went out to LA this last year and are doing really well, and it's nice to see. It's just hard to let go.
That's so cool. So you're also telling me before Stacey came on that what are you trying to do? You're trying to start a stage management class or a stage management
like an adjunct.
Okay.
If I teach, they have to pay me more. So
that's true. So is there not currently a stage management course for the students?
No, we don't have a technical theater program.
Oh, okay.
We do have an independent design major for design type things. It's called an IDM. And we have two students graduating this year with design IDMs. And that's more the technical side. Like, they take design classes, and they work a lot in the shops, and they also can have some opportunities to assistant design a show, assistant Emmy a show, or flat out Emmy a show. But there's not as much opportunity. I mean, we went to a conservatory where opportunity was around every corner. There's not that much here. Just do 4 productions a year.
Right. Well, that's how my undergrad was and where Stacey went to school. I think we actually only did 3. No, I guess we did 4. We did 2 big shows and like 2 shows in a black box every year. There was no actual like tech major. It was just a theater major, you know. I just happened to do tech all the time. So, but
yeah, mine technically just says theater major. I just tell everyone it's technical because I took 2 whole acting classes because they made me.
Well, that's 1 more than I had to take. I'll need to take 1 acting class.
lucky.
Yeah. So when you guys do shows, who stage manages the shows? Is that usually a student position or is it a faculty position?
It's a student position. When I came in, I kind of volunteered to do this because when I came in, it was really a student would volunteer. They'd get like a quarter. They get a quarter credit or half. We bumped it to a half credit now. But they were really given no support, no guidance, no nothing. And so when I got here, I was like, we're going to change this.
Right. You got to know what you're doing.
I had done some stage managing at Cincy Fringe. So I knew a little bit. And I'd been watching Cindy for so long.
It just comes naturally with all that paperwork.
I taught the class, I think, the year that you took ASM. But I can't remember what show you were on.
I ASM'd the opera, Miss Lonely Hearts.
Oh, yeah, we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah. I've blocked a lot of that out.
But at least I know you have the background in it because you took the class. And so you knew the paperwork and you knew, what was going on.
Well, and can I remind you of a story when you were stage managing a show I worked on?
Yeah, do it.
Where I was spotlight operator for Little Women.
Oh.
And I cried every night.
That was.
And I would cry.
Because the show was so awesome.
I would cry so hard when Beth died that my spot would bounce a little. And I think on the final night, it was the scene where Beth and Joe are singing their song and you know Beth is going to die at the end of the song. And I cry through that whole song every time. And you called my spot and you were like, spot 1, go, Katie, don't cry.
That totally sounds like me. Yeah.
Very encouraging.
I'm luckier because I could call cues while crying, but I don't have to be.
Every time and that was a 2-week run for that show.
Right. Yeah.
And every time I cried.
Yeah, but it was such an amazing production. And then what's the song at the end of act 1 that Joe sings?
Astonishing.
Astonishing. Yeah. You just get so excited about it. And though I think that was probably to this date still one of the hardest cues I've ever had to call. I think I only have got it right once.
Was that with the movers that all kind of came in at once?
Yeah, and it's like, so she's like uncovering things in the attic, you know, and of course, because we're at CCM, this has to be like super complicated, and she's supposed to uncover the window in the middle, and there was like 3 cues all there, but it was all on a visual, but you had to call it like a beat early because the movers had to move and stuff, and I swear, like, I hardly ever got it, because you're like calling a visual early. How the hell do you call a visual early, you know?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, it was difficult.
Well-trained actor.
It looked great.
Well, she is well trained and she's now been beautiful on Broadway for the past 6 years. So like she is one of the most amazing actresses I've ever worked with. But
so are you hoping to start this program next semester? Summer?
The problem is it's hard to So Colorado College works on a totally different schedule than any other college in the country. It's called the block plan. So a student will take 1 class from 9 to noon every day for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
From 1 to, I think, 3 are any labs for that class. And then after 3.5 weeks, you get a 5-day weekend. And then the whole process starts all over again that next week. So there's a total of 8 blocks per year. Which is great for some
Yeah, how do you put on a show in that amount of time? Or do you like work in like solving problems or like, you know, growing something in science? But I think that would have been great if I just had to take a couple weeks of a language and just be miserable for a couple weeks and then be done.
Right, but then you don't really like absorb it.
What do they call it? Immersion. Like immersion language, immersion teaching.
Oh, yeah.
So you're getting a lot of information in a short amount of time, but since that's the only thing you have to focus on.
You really focus on it.
You really get to focus on that. Whereas if you're taking five classes and you got to like flip a different switch every 2 hours.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Not having been able to experience the block plan as a student, I think it would be interesting. And I think you're right, for languages, that would be probably the best. And for an English class, you get to really delve into a book pretty deeply and that sort of thing.
Right. Because there were a number of times in school where like you really start getting into something and then the bell rings and you go off to the next class and you don't really have time to like sit and absorb it. Yeah. You're instantly going from English to math to PE to science, you know, and you have no time to like comprehend what's actually going on. So
plus when I'd get to tech and theater, I did no other classwork for a week or two, which probably was not useful for the other classwork, but I had to focus on tech.
Yeah.
So does that make it more difficult for you to try to start a new class? For you to try to get stage management going?
Yes, because a stage manager would work for what we call two blocks. For instance, our first show of our year mounts in block three of, and week three of block two. So we have all of block one and the first like half of block two for production. So those first 3.5 to 4 weeks in block one are pure rehearsal. Every day, a couple hours a day, while we're building in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And get into that second block, we kind of move hot and heavy real fast into getting the set in, getting the lights up, and getting into tech. So it is a short amount of time, but it's not a short, for school, it's a short amount of time. For the real world, it's
about, right. Yeah. Well, it's about normal. You're working all day long, but for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of cool then.
For the real world.
Yeah, that helps for the real world.
It is. The problems we run into is our stage managers don't get to not take a class one of those blocks. So on top of a full course load in the afternoons and evenings of both those blocks, so for 2 months, they're solid in rehearsal. And we run into problems when a student needs to take a science class and take those afternoon labs.
Because then they can't be at rehearsal?
Well, I discovered they can if rehearsals are late, but I discovered the hard way, unfortunately, to the poor student. She was in a lab class and then was in rehearsal. She was in rehearsal set 6 days a week and in lab for five. So she was in class from 9 a.m. to 3 every day and rehearsal from 3 to 10, from 4 to 10. And she ended up honestly making herself ill, and she was so stressed out, and I didn't know any better being new here about that's kind of how things ran. And so she powered through, bless her heart, but we made kind of put our foot down and was like, all right, from now on, we got to know the student's schedule before we give permission for them to stage manage, because we can't fry them like this.
Right.
Like the theater is an extracurricular. Like they'll get credit for doing a show. They'll get like a quarter credit. But it is not, doing a production is not considered a course. It's extra.
That's rough.
It is. It is.
Yeah. So I don't see how anybody would want to do theater there. Like if they really want to do theater, they're going to a school that actually considers theater a major.
A class.
Yeah, class.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of our, if we do have theater majors in our shows, unless it's a gen ed, there aren't a lot of labs. And students do try and organize their schedules around that, around a production, so that they don't have labs. Because it's a well-known fact around here that it's torture trying to do, you know, a 9-to-3 class and then rehearsal after that.
I mean, I don't remember how your school works, Stacey, but I think we got like maybe one credit when we did shows, and it was just at UOP, my undergrad, it was just expected that you took all of your other classes in the morning. All of the theater classes ended by 2 or 3. And then you just, you know, whatever outside classes you had to take, you needed to take them in the morning. And then rehearsals were afternoon, evenings, you know, like we did get credit for it, but it maybe wasn't as intense because you didn't have these blocks. But, you know, you do what you love and you just make the rest of it work. So,
yeah, that is kind of true. It is here.
Yeah.
But then
it's tough, and you do kind of. You get the people who realize, okay, well, this is a lot of work. I don't know if this is for me. But we also have the super, super dedicated ones who are like, I'm taking a lab class and I have a job and I'm doing theater and I'm working in the student theater workshop. And I don't know how they do it. I wish I could transfer some of that energy, but they do it and they're happy doing it. We have a really, really active student theater on campus.
That does all their own stuff?
They have their own black box and their own like pseudo shop and all their own tech equipment and everything. And they are a self-contained entity. And they have a board that is made out of students and they decide what shows they're going to put on a year. And they get funding from student groups, but that's about it. And they put on some great stuff.
That is so awesome. Yeah. So not only are they being able to put on shows, but they're also in the same time learning how to run a company.
Yeah.
That's amazing. This student run thing is so amazing because Stacey and I have had this discussion so many times, and I'm sure it's been on a podcast, but there's so many people that want to start their own theater or start their own company. And even with theater degrees, you know, at CCM, one of the top schools, we weren't taught how to start a company, you know? And so the fact that these students are taking it upon themselves to, like, they want to put on a show, and so they're putting on a show.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've even figured out how to, like, do a board and how to have committees and make it all happen, I mean, that might be even more beneficial than the actual classes they're taking, because that's amazing.
Yeah. No, I mean, they find their own works. If a person wants to put on a show, either direct or produce, they'll present it to the board. Mm-hmm. The board will decide, okay, do we have enough people to do this? Do you have people in mind for a cast, for a director, for a stage manager? And they do have a couple resident folks, like they have a resident lighting person and a technical director. They all sit in a room and talk about the productions and decide what they're going to do and when they're going to do them. And they're booked solid for the entire year with student productions.
That is so awesome.
Yeah.
That's so wonderful for those kids.
And it's not related to you guys at all.
Nope. I mean, we advise because there are some things they come in and they're like, oh, we don't know how to do this, but we really want to do this. So we'll advise, but because they're not part of the department, we can't do a lot. We advise and we'll help with certain things, especially if it's something cool. We'll be like, yeah, come in. We'll totally work on this. And
yeah.
But yeah, and sometimes, and a lot of times we call it renting them equipment. We lend it to them. Because they're a student group. They have a student group budget, so they don't. I think they get $200 a show, and make it work.
Right. Well, we've all been there. We've all done shows on like, here's $50 for props, and you're like, and how many pages is that props list?
Yeah.
Who do I know who works in props that I could borrow from?
Exactly.
Right. But again, I mean, that's what you do
in mom's house. Maybe I can borrow it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what you do in real life. I mean, yeah. I've worked at like rather large companies, and how many times have I heard a props person been like, I was down at Goodwill, or, you know, that's just how it is.
I called my mom last year and had her ship me something from her house for a show because I knew it was there.
I think I've had Cindy knit me things and send them to me for shows.
Yep. Nice.
I have, yeah.
Just give her enough warning.
You this summer, Cindy.
Well, that kind of leads to like, so you, speaking of props, what you work as a props master during the summer?
Mm-hmm. I work at the Colorado Shakespeare Festival as the prop supervisor. And this will be my third summer there.
And how many shows do they do during the summer?
Four. Well, four and then something they call the OP. And oh my God, I'm having a brain fart and don't remember what OP stands for. Original production.
Oh, okay.
Where they actually, they stage it. It's the cast, the whole summer cast. And they stage an original production as it would have been done in Shakespeare's time. So actors find their own costumes. They have a week to do an entire, a full-length Shakespeare play.
Wow.
Yeah. And they do it on our outdoor set, which is our larger sets, and they do it with what's there. They use found props, found costumes. We don't really do much. They say, hey, we need a sword. We'll go get them a sword, but we're not going to, you know, furnish a table of meats and cheeses.
Right.
So, and it's great. What did we do last year? I think one of the Richards. It was one of the War of the Roses, because the audience, half the audience got white flags and the other half got red flags. And so it was the War of the Roses. The audience could like wave their flags when their team was winning. And it was really, and they encouraged so much audience participation that like you're booing while people are saying lines and you're cheering and it's great.
Which is how it was done actually in Shakespeare's time. Like yeah. that's what it was.
Yeah.
So how did you start working at this company?
A friend called me.
That's how it like.
I see a trend.
In theater.
I have
how many people just it's who you know. Like that's just how this company works.
Honest to God, in my entire career, from the time I graduated college in 2001 to now, I have only had to actually apply for a job once.
And everything else is just word of mouth or
yep.
Right.
And the one time I applied for a job was 4 years ago. I decided I want to do something different in the summer. So on a whim, I decided to apply to a theater in Maine for an ATD position. And when I got the call back, they're like, well, we already filled our ATD position, but I see on your resume that you've done some props. Would you like to be our prop master? And I was like, sure, what the hell? I've never done it before. Let's fly halfway across the country.
Again.
And I did it. It was, I'll be nice and say it was an interesting experience.
That is so many shows.
I know. But the friends I made at that theater are friends that, like, it's like going to war with someone. You you will never not love them.
Mm-hmm.
And the next summer, it turns out one of the lighting designer I worked with called me up and said, hey, I really think you should look at Colorado Shakes. And I was like, okay. I mean, you know, last summer kind of sucked, so I'm not really looking into doing the summer shit anymore. But he was like, no, really, you should try this. The production manager's going to give you a call because I gave him your name. I'm like, oh, great. So I interviewed for this job and got it basically on my friend's recommendation. Where, you know, he was coming in as a scenic designer and the production manager called and said, look, my scenic designer says he wants you, so I want you, period.
Perfect.
I was like, okay. So I walked from never doing props before to doing props at this little podunk theater to going to Colorado Shakespeare Festival with these huge sweeping productions. And I'll admit, I kind of floundered my first year, but I loved it. Like, I pulled from every possible thing I had ever learned in theater and beyond. Like, my preschool teaching experience came out in that. I mean, making something out of nothing is where that comes from. It's like, oh, hey, I think I have some foam over here and some, you know, some pipe cleaners. Maybe that'll work.
Yep. The time. I walk into Home Depot and they're like, what are you making?
Yeah.
Don't
ask me that, guys.
Well, a lightsaber, but steampunk style. What can you do for me? Just, I'll figure it out. Never mind.
I have so much fun with those guys sometimes.
Yeah. Why? Then they all look at me funny.
Why are you looking in the plumbing section? Trust me, you don't want to know.
Because these PVC pipes are very nice. And these connectors here, you know, mm-hmm. paint them up a little bit. They'll look just like metal.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I love that you just don't do, like, you're not just the TD, you know, that you do lighting and props and everything else. And I feel like most of the people that we've interviewed, like, that's just how everybody... almost everybody has been that we've talked to, you know, everybody, that's just how you do technical theater. I feel like, you know,
there's everybody so much has worked.
There is. And you just kind of fill in kind of where you need to fill in. And some shows call for different things. And I think those of us who actually do end up making a living at it is because we know how to do all those different things. And I think it's awesome that, well, you're probably a little bit like me. You TD for 9 months out of the year, and then you kind of go to props. And so you don't ever really get tired of anything because you switch back and forth all the time.
Yeah.
So that's why I stay at Gap sometimes, because I'll get tired of stage managing, or I get so stressed out about that. Then you're like, okay, I'm going to take like a month off and go work at Gap. And then after a month at Gap, I'm like, okay, I'm really tired of these people at Gap. So I'm going to go back to stage managing because they're so different from each other. And it's just so much fun. But
I kind of get that during the school year as well, because I am ATD, but I'm also the lighting supervisor. So, you know, the TD and I plan the shows and we kind of work everything out, and then we'll start building. About halfway through the build process, I got to go. Like, I got to switch hats. And I got to be lighting lady now. And tech is interesting. Tech is a tough time for me because I'm ATD, I'm master electrician, but I'm also training the stage managers. So talk about never sitting down.
Yeah.
Between, you know, a lamp goes out or the focus fell on this, I'm up in the grid fixing that, or hey, this little piece of scenery isn't working the way it should. We're on stage, and then running back and forth saying, okay, how you doing? You know, are you listening to the lighting designer for where these cues go? Do you need anything? And it tech is crazy.
Yep. I'm the assistant technical director and production manager, but my TD doesn't sit through tech. I sit through tech. So I do a lot of the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, I'm taking notes on props and I'm taking notes on what lights and sound needs, but I'm also on stage making sure the scene changes are happening, and I got to call break so nobody goes in overtime, and I got to make sure, you know, the reports are done and all that. Yeah. But it's, somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I love tech, especially like you, and I just sit on my ass for like hours on end and have people tell me like cues. I'm gonna have to remember this the next time I get stressed out during tech. Like, I only got one job right now.
See, slacker.
I know.
All you do is stare at your book and say something. Go.
When I'm lucky, yeah. If I'm not running the board by myself, that's true.
Well, I will say, when I was working at the high school, especially after the director got ill. And I kind of stepped into that position. My title was director of theatrical productions, where I was the director, the stage manager, the technical director, the lighting designer, set designer, and master lift. Like, I was everything.
You made shows happen.
Like, it was overwhelming, but at the same time, it wasn't having to communicate with 10 people. It was just all in my brain.
That's
when
true.
You knew what was going on. Like, you knew what the set looked like because you just built the set. So it was much easier to light or, you know.
And I was directing everything. So I knew where the actors were going to be. So focus.
Yeah, good point. You don't need light walkers because now you know where they are.
Yeah.
So that does make it easier. So one, because I think we're about an hour and we're trying to keep these at an hour, but this is what I think I mentioned, you know, everyone gets kind of nervous and then you just start talking and then you just like keep talking and talking because everyone who does tech theater, I feel just everyone is so passionate about it, you know, but you have to be. That's why you do it. And so
if you don't love it, it's not worth doing.
Right. But all of us can just talk about it for hours and hours and hours because it's what we love. Our last question is always, because we're twins, is if you have any twin story. I don't know if, did you teach any twins when you're in school? Or I don't think there were any twins really at CCM when we were there.
I did. I had a set of twins at the high school. And the great part about this is when I was teaching at the lower school, I had them as little bitties. And then when they got to high school, I was teaching at the high school.
Oh, how cool.
So Betsy and Ginger were twins and they were in the shows.
Yay.
Yeah.
Were they identical or were they?
They're identical. Yeah.
Could you tell them apart?
Yeah. One had a freckle.
Yep. I had a birthmark. It's not very clear anymore. When we were younger, it was much darker. And our oldest cousin could tell us apart because Cindy had two freckles on one side of her nose and I didn't. But he's the only one I think that ever told us apart that way.
Yeah, he even pointed it out to me and I'm like, what are you talking about? He was like, look, and he like pointed to him and I still see him now. But yeah, everyone else knew us because Stacy had a birthmark and I didn't. And that was like the only way anybody told us apart. Well, I bet those two were hard to let go of if you worked with them when they were little and then in high school and then.
Well, it was a lot of them, actually.
That you like moved up with?
Yeah. My first year teaching in kindergarten, those kids are graduating college this year.
Wow.
And I still keep in touch with so many of them.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's because I had them when they were young. And then I also ran the summer camp. So, you know, I had them all through the year and then I had them in the summer. And then I never worked at the middle school, so I missed them for that, you know, prepubescent craziness. But I got them back in the high school when I was doing the theater up there and actually got a lot of them to do theater because I was in the department.
Right. So they knew you, so it was comfortable. And
yeah.
Did any of them go on to do theater now?
Not for my younger classes, but when I first started at the high school in 2002, I have, let's see, Ollie's a PA in Hollywood. Yeah, I had quite a few go on and keep doing theater. Ollie, Phil, Aaron, Pepper. More of them did it in college, and few went on and kept doing it after.
But that's, I mean, any of them that do, that's so awesome. Yeah.
Especially coming from such a small school.
Yeah.
You know, we did two productions a year and they averaged 65 kids in a class.
Wow.
So, yeah. But yeah.
That's awesome. Yay, you had a good twin story. So many people are like, we don't know any twins. Then again, like, we didn't know any twins growing up either. So I guess that would have been our excuse too if we weren't twins. But
well, I'm still friends with those two on Facebook too.
Yay. That's what I love about Facebook is that you still stay in touch with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And it's not considered stalking when you just follow them constantly without ever having to talk to them.
Exactly.
You can do it with hundreds of people at a time.
Yeah.
Off in the comfort of my room.
Now you just sound creepy, dude.
But it's great when I start working with someone and I friend them on Facebook and I'm like, hey, you're friends with so-and-so. And so it's, we got 23 friends in common. Cool.
Yeah, this is very true.
What?
That's so cool.
It's a small world, the theater world.
It is a tiny world, yeah. But that's
I was at the fabric store yesterday, just a small little fabric store in Long Beach, and I'm buying, 14 yards of white fabric for a death scene, as you do. And the lady behind me is like, oh, wow, you're buying a lot of stuff. What's it for? And again, I was thinking, oh, how do you explain this? And I'm like, oh, I do theater. It's for, And she's like, whoa, they don't usually allow white on stage. And I was like, whoa. How do you know that? She's like, my daughter is a sound engineer. I'm making a big pot for the local ballet. They wanted cardboard. And I said, no, we can make it out of fabric. And I was like, excellent.
Wow. Somebody who speaks my language.
Yeah. That's it was awesome. Very funny because I was just at a little fabric store. I didn't expect to meet someone who understood theater and was making a prop. So it was kind of funny. And I think her daughter, she said, oh, I think my daughter performed there like 10 years ago at the theater I was working at, or I'm working at. And I'm like, oh, wow. Really is a small world.
I've had some interesting reactions, especially as a prop person, from I guess civilians of theater.
Yeah, commoners.
On Craigslist, I found this person who was selling an entire dining set, like, had a tea set and everything, and I show up at their house and pick it up, and the guy's like, oh, I hope you get good use out of this. By the way, why are you buying this? And I turn around and I go, I'm about to make your dishes famous.
That's the best answer ever.
He was like, what? I was like, well, I work at this theater and I'm gonna put them in a show. And he got legitimately angry.
What? Why?
Yeah, I was like, you're not using them to serve at your home? I was like, no.
Why would I need a tea set?
I'm putting food on them, sir, but they're going to be on stage in a play. And he was angry. And I hightailed it out of there. Like, I stuffed that stuff in my backseat and reversed all the way down the driveway.
That's so weird. So I feel like most people get excited about stuff like that, Like. Yeah.
No,
he
was upset with me.
But it's not like
mental note, don't get anything from this guy again.
But it's not like you were like, hey, I'm gonna go blow these up. Like,
yeah,
you clean them
on
stage.
Not like I'm throwing them in a box so I can hear what they sound like. It's they're being used, they will be saved because it's a full set, believe me, hon. Those don't come around very often.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, I'm gonna keep those for like 20 years. Those are very valuable.
Last year we had to build, I had to build a motorcycle for a show, but it had to be more like a tricycle so the actors wouldn't fall. So I found a guy on Craigslist again who was selling just the front end of a motorcycle. So it was the tire, the forks, and the handlebars. And so I built this frame for a tricycle and welded that to it. When I went to go pick it up, it was this cute little old man. And I went with Amber.
Oh, awesome.
I went with Amber to pick it up and throw it in the back of a truck. And he was like, we pull up and he's like, what do you ladies want? He's like, sir, I bought your motorcycle wheels. He's like, what? I was like, yeah. So we loaded in the truck and he's like, what are you doing with these? And I tried to explain it and he just gave me like this blank stare and he was like, all right, good luck.
He's all, first of all, there's two women showing up at my house picking up motorcycle parts, which is uncommon.
All right.
And now she's talking about welding it to a tricycle.
Yeah. Oh, his exact words were, yeah, I don't understand anything what you just said, but good luck.
Trust me, it'll make sense. Yeah. Maybe not to you, but to me.
A picture. But yeah.
You should have sent him a picture. That would have been funny. Like, had the cast signed it. I'm like, here you go. This is what we did with your stuff.
He was a cool old guy because I had to get everything signed so I could get reimbursed. It was like $25 for two motorcycle wheels and handlebars.
That's not bad at all.
And I told him, I was like, can I have you sign this just so I can get reimbursed? He's like, sure. He looks at it. He's like, do you want me to tell him you paid me $100? I was like, what? He's like, I mean, you only have to pay me 25, but I'll tell him you paid me 100. I was like, I love you. Do you have anything else to sell?
That's the best.
He didn't get mad at you like T-set guy.
No, that was in Maine. So that was part of the interesting experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to state for the record, I only took $25 for that. And was only reimbursed for $25.
Well, yeah. At least you're honest about it.
Sometimes, especially the Craigslist and all, they're like, how do I give you a receipt? I'm like,
yeah.
Sometimes I just print out that says I bought it. And I'm like, here's a printout of what I bought and a copy of the check I wrote. Like,
yeah,
that hope that's good.
That's yeah, a piece of paper that says what it is. Yeah, I was shopping for a coal bucket in Denver, and some guy had one. And he lived in downtown Denver, and he was like, "All right, I don't want you to know where I live, so I'll meet you on the corner." I was like, "All right." In downtown Denver, I'm standing on a very busy street corner with one of my interns. And we're just standing there, like, looking around for a guy walking down the street with a bucket. Like, at one point, we just look at each other, and it's like, when did this become real life? Like, do you see a guy with a bucket? Oh, I thought that guy had a bucket. Now it's a briefcase.
He has a bucket, but it doesn't look like a coal bucket. Why is he carrying a random bucket?
We stood there for, like, an hour because the guy had fallen asleep.
Oh no, did he finally show up?
He did finally show up, and he was legit in his pajamas walking down the street with a bucket.
And you guys paid for that.
I wish I'd had my phone on or my camera going, because oh my god.
The things you do for theater.
Thanks you.
For props. I mean, I think it's like props has got to be one of the best for stories like this, you know? Like, yeah. Lighting designers don't go stand on a street corner waiting for someone to show up with props.
Oh. No, that'd be weird.
Definitely don't. Yeah.
But, I got a source for. I'll meet you on the corner. What?
Well, that same day, we had been looking for barrels and, again, on Craigslist, found a brewery that was trying to get rid of barrels, and they were selling huge whiskey barrels for $40 a piece, which
those things are expensive.
That was dirt crap cheap. So I bounced on it. I was like, yes, I'm coming right now. We took a minivan down to pick them up, and there were four of them. We, the big burly guys at the brewery put them in the back of the truck. But the problem was they were still imbibed with a bit of whiskey. And I swear to God, even with all the windows down, I swear we got a little buzzed off of just the fumes in the car.
You're like, I hope nobody pulls me over right now.
Yeah. Driving from Boulder to Denver is about 45-minute drive. And the only thing I'm doing, I have hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, and my like looking straight ahead, going, dear God, don't let me get pulled over.
How am I going to explain this way?
I'm not going to convince a cop I'm not drunk with the stench coming out of this car.
Yeah, the amount of times I've driven around with weapons in my car, and none of them have the orange on the end. And I remember one time I got pulled over, and he's like, do you have any weapons in the car? And I went, no. It's like, they don't actually shoot.
Yeah.
But I do have a machete and a couple rifles in the back seat. So.
But a machete is normal, right?
Like, yeah. It has the sheath on it. I think it's okay.
Revolutionary War musket in the trunk. Does that count?
Yeah. But I've dulled down the knife blade so it can't hurt an actor. So I think it's okay.
Oh my God.
I think this is why I don't do props. It scares me. I wouldn't be good at that. I would just like stare at the cop and be like,
Can't tell if I'm supposed to lie.
I don't know.
always covered in red. It's just the dye.
Good times.
So I guess we should go. So
sorry.
No. The last guy we had to break into two podcasts because we talked with Andy for like 2 hours. So it's good. It's just what happens.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Katie. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for agreeing to be on our podcast. And Patrick, I kind of feel like I want to come check out Colorado College now because it sounds like such a cool place to.
You should. Colorado's freaking gorgeous. It doesn't get much better. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no humidity out here.
Right.
Okay. Now we'll go so we can eat dinner and you guys can, the twin can probably go to sleep. And I don't know what you guys do in Colorado.
Yeah. I don't know what you do in Colorado. Well, she's still at the office, so she needs to go home.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good. Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Katie. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Twins Talk Theater. If you would like more, visit our website at twinstalktheater.podbean.com or on Facebook at Twins Talk Theater. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. Also, give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you'd like about the show.